Today's episode is sponsored by the new e-commerce podcast, The E-commerce Leader. The podcast is hosted by myself and Jason Miles, multi-million dollar Shopify owner and Udemy's highest rated e-commerce instructor. If you own a thriving online business and want to be the best leader you can, it's got your name on it. For free guides and mini courses on many e-commerce topics, go to theecommerceleader.com. Being ready for the holiday season is absolutely critical for your store's or Amazon success. That's why Capital Advance from today's sponsor Payoneer could be exactly what you need. Capital Advance gives you working capital to spend on anything that helps you grow your business. Use it to buy more inventory or more advertising or whatever you want. Offers feature a single fixed fee and a gradual settlement plan. Just go to payoneer.com/capital for a free consultation with a working capital expert today. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, this is Michael Veazey from Amazing FBA. I'm here with Daisy Sepulveda of My Product Model, who produce glamorized and stylized photos for e-commerce. So they're unashamedly glamorous looking, high-end, high-branding type stuff. We've had quite an interesting conversation about how you need to think through your brand and who is actually buying and that sort of stuff. But today we're going to talk a bit more conventional stuff about producing beautiful, glamorous and stylized photography and indeed videos for Amazon. So Daisy, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me. So happy to be here.
It's good to talk to you. And I love the fact that when you come on, we end up inevitably talking about society and how people fit into it and complex social stuff. So we've got to compress that down into a more takeaway, go and implement this kind of episode today, I think. So one of the things you offer on your website is commercial product photos and then something else called editorial product photos. What even is that difference there? Can you explain that for us?
Oh, yes. On the most simplistic level, if you look at open a magazine, you look at a woman promoting a beverage, like a soda pop or something, and she's smiling and she's happy and everyone can relate to that. That's a commercial image. You open the next page in the magazine and we have this really glamorous woman selling in diamonds and an evening gown selling perfume. That's an editorial. On the most simple basis, that's it. A commercial photo is something that is directly selling a lifestyle product, something that everyone can consume. An editorial photo in general is selling something that only a certain group of people would be interested in or consume.
Well, that's completely different to what I assumed it would be. That's very interesting. So it sounds like it's more about the relationship between the product and the consumer base than about anything else. So the commercial one is anyone can have this, and then the editorial one is more exclusive. Is that about right?
Yes, and that's the way that, and I'm interpreting it that way in terms of selling, right, in terms of sales. If you're in the photography world, the way that it would be described or the difference between commercial and editorial would be different. Like editorial, a photographer would describe editorial as a moment in time, right? Encompassing an emotion in time through capturing it through video or an image. A commercial would be something that's directly selling. Commercial would be something that's sales oriented. But if you ask a model, for example, what is an editorial? What is a commercial? A model, from a model's perspective, is going to say a commercial is something, doing commercial work or a commercial photo is something that is relatable. Everybody can relate to that woman or that girl that model in the photo. An editorial is something that only certain people can relate to. It's aspirational. And so when you go down the line, these terms mean different things to different people in different areas of the production process, but it culminates at the center of the idea of selling something relatable versus selling something that is aspirational. I think that is where it all meets in the middle, and that's when the content is being created.
Very interesting. So I think we talked about this last time. I wasn't expecting it to be so clear and simple and into the execution of it, but you just basically, we had quite a long conversation about the fact that even though people may be buying stuff who are one type of person, so maybe they're working class, maybe they're plus size women, but the people who are in the photography are the aspirational guys, so they are very zero size or upper class or whatever it may be. And so I suppose what you're talking about is a divide in the actual photography between those two words, which are, by the way, quintessentially California, relatable and aspirational somehow. They're not the words that would trip off the tongue for a normal British person. So yeah. As you're in LA, very appropriate that the home of models and film and creating, mm-hmm. I suppose, a sort of idealized lifestyle. So to break it down for us in a sort of practical way, if you got your rather rigid but at least simple framework of the 9 photos that you're allowed on an Amazon listing, first of all, how would these things show up in a practical way on an Amazon listing?
So most things on Amazon listings are commercial. And I think in the future, will that ever change? In the fashion aspect, possibly. Amazon has tried to go upstream with like more high-end stuff, and especially in the fashion jewelry space, but it all comes out commercial. I find that in the context of Amazon, it's hard to sell something editorial. And so mainly most people on selling on Amazon are just going to consume themselves with commercial, creating commercial content, creating things that the average consumer on Amazon can relate to, can see themselves doing or using or wearing or trying, you know, experiencing to some capacity. And there's just going to be variations of that, whether you're selling a product that supposedly fixes somebody's life or enhancing somebody's life or experience versus something that's very practical to utilize. All of those things are it's going to be very degrees of that. So it's just going to be, you're breaking down the commercial category, so to speak.
So that's interesting. I mean, one thing that makes me reflect on that then is if you're trying to show a sort of everyday Joe using the famous back brace we've referenced before, that having somebody who doesn't look like an everyday person isn't relatable, but they're not really exactly aspirational either because they don't look like a James Bond type person either. So would you say that kind of falls between the two stools? What's your view on the average kind of product photo and how that relates to these categories?
I think some of the sellers, like when you use that back brace and that buff guy who is okay looking, right, but he's got a buffed body. I will say this, because that listing, for example, they could have sold like thousands of products. And so they could probably say, oh, nothing's wrong with our image. We've sold thousands of products. We sell about hundreds a day or something. I mean, that's not necessarily true. It's just that there's no one else selling that same product better. And that's targeting that customer better. And a lot of times, and also what happens is that people buy based on how many reviews or how many products are sold. So if that product has 2,000 reviews, it might not be the best product, but no one else has competed in that space at a threshold that is going to steal away sales. And so if you're thinking about creating a back brace and selling it on Amazon, then you really have to think about what customer you're going after and how you can steal some of those sales from that other listing through images, through content, and through niching out that audience, right? So for example, a lot of overweight people need back support. They need back support when they're standing and when they're sitting, right? They need better posture. So you're probably going to want to create content that is directed more towards them. The difficulty comes into finding, in every aspects of the content creation ecosystem, it's actually finding someone that's plus size to take those right photos of them wearing the back brace and stuff like that. That's a supply chain issue. And that's something that we're in Los Angeles. We have an endless amount of talent here and we can pretty much find for you. But in other areas, you probably can't find someone. That's going to be a bit harder. You may be, what's in now is like the Gymshark kind of girl who wears a waist trainer while she does deadlifts in her spandex. And so if that's your customer, you're creating a back brace for her or back, so waist trainer / back support for her, then you're going to want images that reflect that. And yes, she needs to be pretty, but she also needs to be, the consumer needs to be able to see themselves in her. I think with women selling to women, you almost have to have this, I'll look better than her in that, you know, why'd they use that girl? They could have used me. Well, there's a lot of answers to why that didn't happen and why you didn't get chosen. But that's generally how women, generally speaking, as women listening to this, generally speaking, how women think. They look at the ad and they go, oh, that's, if it looks good on her, it's definitely going to look good on me because I look better than her.
And fascinating. So I love this. So you're painting a very specific idea, which is you want to hire a model such that the woman looking at it will go, she looks good, but I could look better. That's a very specific sort of thing to aim for.
It's aspirational. It's achievable, aspirational. Okay. Like achievable, so, what we call achievable beauty.
Achievable beauty, interesting. So, and I guess that sort of relatable idea then is not necessarily literally about grabbing somebody off the street who's a typical consumer, because they would actually disappoint the consumer and they wouldn't buy it. But it's equally not about somebody who looks impossibly glamorous. It's about that kind of edge of relatable where it shades into somebody who looks just impossibly good. Is it that kind of sweet spot? Is that about right?
Yes. And I want to say something in a little bit, because I can hear people. I listen to a lot of podcasts. And I could hear myself and probably some of your audience right now going, well, AI is going to change all of this. And in AI, you can make the models and stuff like that. And so we can dive into this if you want to, but I just want to say we are so far from that, in that it doesn't matter, because you still need to make your products now, today, and you still need to sell your products today. I don't think that selling AI for product photos or for images, especially clothing, consumable goods, is actually going to be as successful as people think it is, because women, humans have an uncanny relationship, a distrusting relationship with something that doesn't seem to look and move and act like them. And we have an inherent ability to tell when something is not real. It's probably an anomaly, a human anomaly about why that is. But there is this conversation about, oh, I won't need to hire models anymore because there'll be AI. I think that'll be fringe for a long enough time for you to sell lots and lots of products using real models and real lifestyle images and real content creation before it all goes into AI on the computer and these images, these digital 3D images are taking up more and more of the market. And to that extent, I'm also seeing a lot of my customers that were using 3D generated images to sell their products back away from that on Amazon, back away from that, because people can tell that they're not real, no matter how beautiful they look, no matter how great it looks to have the planter in a fake interior environment, 3D interior environment. Consumers and women are expert consumers, know when it's real and when it's not real. And we might not comment on it or say it, but we know and we won't buy it. And so I see that customers, my clients, are trending towards replacing the 3D images that they bought originally from somebody else with real lifestyle images, because it makes a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also what strikes me is this is foolish economy, because people tend to think in terms of, I'm going to pay $300 for, I'm sorry, say again?
You said foolish. Yeah. I've never heard that. That is a great, wow. That's a great phrase.
And I've not made it up, I have to say, but foolish economy is when you spend $300 on some kind of really faked, bad looking Photoshop work. And there's great skill in doing Photoshop well, but let's say it's second rate and it really looks like that. The shadows don't fall in the right place. The product looks implausibly perfect, etc. And then you sell 10,000 units. Well, if you spent $1,000 on that and you sell 10,000 units, the cost per unit is pretty tiny anyway. So you're going to sell more of them at a probably higher price point. You're going to get a better brand look and feel out there. And if you really aspire to creating a real brand, and a lot of people talk about it and don't, but even if you don't, it's so much better value that it's extremely short-term thinking to think that cheap photography will do the job. And I understand the pain of people with a catalog of 1,000 products. I get why they want economies of scale, but I just always feel like if it's for a serious product that it is a headline product that sells a lot, it's really very short-sighted. I guess I'm saying that. It sounds like I'm just selling your wares as a photographer, but I'm 100% convinced of that, because in the end, we just buy images. Nobody buys anything real anymore online, do they? You're not buying a product. You can't pick it up. You can't tap it. You can't smell it. You can't feel the weight of it. So it's 100% images. So I just think you've got to be right on that. And humans aren't stupid. And as you said, expert consumers like women, they're browsing for hours. They can instantly sniff it out if it's fake. Yeah, it's just not going to work. And again, talking about the data-driven type person, I think data-driven men are particularly the worst of, like, hoping that there's some technological solution to something that's going to cost them real money.
Yes, that's very true. That's very true.
And it normally isn't, in my experience.
I will say, very smart men tend to skew towards this. like, and my partner, my boyfriend, is definitely was one of these types of guys. It's very smart and too smart for your own good in some kind of ways. We used to make a joke sometime. And we've had to go down, even with his products, when he was selling on Amazon and doing e-commerce, I had to walk him through the whole process and why this shortcut is not a good shortcut. And that, yeah, this creating content, creating photos is a real job. It has a real value. And I think if you explain it the right way, people get it. But you do, some data-driven people do have to trial and error. They have to do it the hard way. And it's hard when those people are really successful, because then it's going to come a point where you're not going to be that successful and you're going to struggle. It's like being successful at first and then not successful, you're going to struggle. And so it's really hard. It's a real challenge. But I think that the more information is out there, the more people that are talking about it, like you and I, and the easier we are making it for other people.
So what are the characteristics of successful, relatable photos then? I guess we talked about artificiality, which is not good, and having really very ordinary people isn't good, and having super overly model-like people isn't good. So what are the characteristics that do work really well for the sort of relatable editorial, it's commercial type photography?
Yeah. As number one, so like in Amazon, you have to have a certain percentage of the photo that is actually the product. So composition is really important. Lighting is so important. Having good lighting is so underrated. It is so important to having good product photography, and especially on platforms like Amazon, having good composition and in the photo. So understanding the amount of space the product is taking up in the photo so that the focus is actually on the product and not on the entire photo. Nothing is worse than looking at a Amazon photo, supporting photo, the other 8 spaces, and looking at a lifestyle photo and looking in somebody's living room or set and going, oh man, that is a nice couch, when actually what you're selling is a coffee table, which I have done definitely, and then gone on a tangent and looked for the couch and not the, instead of the coffee table. Wayfair is one, or furniture is a big one for that. So furniture is still a big challenge in creating lifestyle content that is sellable and so forth. And also understanding the use cases of the product. So you can assume that a use case of a product is what people are going to buy it for, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's true. And I think a lot of product creators, they create products thinking that this is going to solve A problem, and what really people are using it to solve B problem. And a lot of product creators don't actually experiment and use their own products that they created in different ways. The first thing I like to do when I get a product from a client is try to use it in different ways. I'll use it in the way that they say that I should use it, but then I'll use it in different ways. And for example, one of my clients is a rotating makeup brush. And they're a big company. They're an Amazon Launchpad. And basically the makeup brush, it's battery operated, turns on and on, and has different removable, replaceable heads. And it's mainly used for foundation, powder, contouring, highlighting, and stuff like that. But the first thing I did, I have all their whole product line, is start using the different brush heads for different things on my face. Because that's how your customers are going to use it. Your customers are not going to be so specific to think that, oh, this is the foundation brush head, and every time they go to add a new layer of makeup, they're going to change their brush head. When we get lazy and we start tend to multi-use the same thing over and over again, and that's something that I like to play with. Another one of my companies is iPhone phone attachment, and in the way that I've seen people actually use the back of the phone attachment, you know, the one that you put on the back of, you stick on the back of the phone, and it's a ring or a knob, and you can also stick it places. And so the way I've seen it promoted to be used is not the way that I've seen people on the street use it. So I like to, like, I will go and walk around in H&M or in Target and watch like a bunch of young people and just how they behave and how they consume and what they're using a lot of popular products for, like the iPhone ring / knob thing, and look for where, you know, go to places and outdoor malls. COVID makes it kind of difficult, but watch people and how they wear things, how they use things. I go into my friends' houses pre-COVID and watch how they use their household appliances as opposed to how they're supposed to be used on the box. And in my house, I also do the same thing with my Instapot. For example, I use an Instapot in so many different ways that there are no instructions for how to use it, because part of my nature is to just try things to go against the natural order of things or the grain of things. But that also creates a lot of opportunity and a lot of creativity. And so when my clients are asking me for household images for their household products, I do the same thing. I think of like, okay, they said this is a fruit basket, but maybe people are going to use it to wash vegetables. I mean, that seems very linear, no brainer, but, or nuts or something else. And, or maybe it can be used for other things. And then I'm understanding the use case of it better, because there's going to be a lot of the same competing products using the same lifestyle concepts to create their content. And you've got to figure out how to deliver more value to your end use and consumer. And I think that's the biggest thing that is competitive on Amazon and in the Amazon ecosystem.
Wow. So there's a lot of thought that goes into this stuff, obviously. And what's interesting to me, I guess, to summarize what you just said is probably, as maybe a sort of semi over analytical man who doesn't use things in an imaginative enough way. But I think it's this, that I guess you've got one product, but you can show three uses of it. You're kind of giving them three things in one, aren't you? It's kind of a three in one product, even though it's the same physical thing. You got three use cases. It kind of is like three products in one, even though it's just photography implying what you can do. And I guess that, I suppose another way of putting it is, you are using imagination really hard so that the person buying it doesn't have to. You've done the imagining and they just do the consuming.
Yeah.
Something like that, like, right?
Like those flat water bottles that are really, and I have one. And I think they did great lifestyle photos because they showed how many ways you can use it. It's a flat water bottle that fits into your purse, you know, it's like a little square. They have a little oval shape, like a canteen, almost like an updated canteen. But what I loved about it is that it showed, essentially, it's the same thing, that you can take this water bottle on the go with you. That's the biggest message, is it can go anywhere with you. But the subtext of that message is that it can fit in, you don't need a big bag to carry it. So it can fit in your crossbody bag, your crossbody purse. Right. And most listeners would know what that is, but it can also fit. And if you're going for a walk, you can hook it on your hand. You don't need to carry a bag. If you needed to run with it, it's flat enough and that you can just hold the edge and you can run with it. You can leave it out in the sun. There's one image, I think, where they took it to the beach, and because it's BPA free or something, like, it won't melt. The plastic won't melt into your water. The particles of plastic won't melt into your water or something. But it was really clever in showing all of the features of the product. And a lot of people tend to think that a water bottle is a water bottle is a water bottle. And I'm just going to show you it on my counter. I'm going to show it to you holding it as I walk out the door. I'm going to show it to you drinking it while I'm in the gym. But you're basically selling the same thing three times. Instead, you can show it with different use cases. Is a water bottle only used for water? Or can it be used for a different type of drink, right? Can it fit? Where can it fit? How big is this water bottle? Because people don't like to read dimensions. You have to show them. Can this water bottle, and there's a lot of misleading 3D images on Amazon with dimensions of products, right? Size dimensions, because you can 3D, you can take it and make it look bigger. You want to make it take up more of the photo. So they kind of skew the image to look bigger than what it is, which then you don't read the dimension, the size dimension of it. And you end up buying a product that you think is either smaller or bigger than it actually is. So actually showing it in a real use case scenario, for example, if it says, oh, you can carry it anywhere, or it can fit into, it's this small and it can fit in your bag. Does it actually fit in a crossbody bag? Do you need a big hobo bag or a tote bag to carry the bottle? This water bottle is an example. This is a big bottle. It does not fit in a crossbody bag. It has to fit in a tote bag. Just having those examples there is really important.
So this is powerful stuff. I guess it comes down to what strikes me is the detail of, you've got a widget, now what do you actually really do with it in real life rather than what you should theoretically do? And that sort of interaction between the design that was designed to solve one particular problem and then what people really do with it in real life. So definitely worth exploring. Today's episode is sponsored by the new e-commerce podcast, The E-commerce Leader. The podcast is hosted by myself and Jason Miles, multi-million dollar Shopify owner and Udemy's highest rated e-commerce instructor. If you own a thriving online business and want to be the best leader you can, it's got your name on it. For free guides and mini courses on many e-commerce topics, go to theecommerceleader.com.